From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Owls. They're birds we more often hear than see, exceptionally well-camouflaged creatures, many of whom move about in the hours of low light for an extra layer of stealth, making them seem even more mysterious. So what do you know about owls, besides perhaps the eerie sound of their voices? For wildlife photographer and writer Paul Banik, owls have been the subject of much study and also the topic of several of his books, and he's here today to tell us about these incredible animals who have commanded his attention and should command more of ours. So more in a moment, but first these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Paul Banik is an award-winning author and wildlife photographer based in Seattle, whose work focuses on the natural history of North America with a particular emphasis on the conservation of birds and their habitats. He's written several books about owls, including Owl, A Year in the Lives of North American Owls, and another about the great gray, and one about the snowy owl, too, plus a book about woodpeckers. I'm so glad he's back on the program today. So hi, Paul, how are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you, Margaret.
Have you been out with the birds?
Yes, I have. I was photographing great horned owls branching from their nests and great gray owls, three nestlings huddled together with their mother in another nest.
Oh, those faces.
Oh, yeah.
They're amazing. They're amazing looking birds. So just a little bit of background and so forth to get us started. You know, I mentioned the camouflage that owls kind of wear, and they're often, I guess, crepuscular or even nocturnal habits. How in the world do you manage all these incredible photos in your various owl books? I mean, it's not like they're out there posing at high noon or anything, are they?
No, it's a good question, Margaret. And to underline your point, owls have a distinctive shape. They're flat-headed. They have almost a rectangular shaped body when they're perched, and they attract the attention of all kinds of animals, birds, and mammals in particular, who know them as an animal that could potentially, let's just say, eat their young. So
yes.
Owls are attacked by a wide range of animals, and they're pursued also by humans oftentimes. So they benefit from blending into their environment and for moving as little as possible. So when they are moving, they're in pursuit of prey or they're in pursuit of a mate. And that means that their movement is going to occur at the same time that their prime prey is most likely either moving about or resting in a vulnerable place. And in both cases, that tends to be at the low hours, at dusk or dawn, or the first hours of darkness, or the last hours of darkness before the curtain of the morning raises.
Yeah.
To answer the second part of the question, how do I find them? The number one recommendation I have is learn about their life histories. Learn where you can find them and what habitat types, what other common elements need to be there, what trees are present. What is the canopy cover like? What other animals and plants live in those same ecosystems? And then familiarize yourself with a place. And as your sojourns into these places unfold, you begin to be alert to what's different. And the owls will show up significantly enough where if you're in tune to your environment, you will notice, oh, is that a leaf? An extra leaf on that tree? Oh no, it's something else. Maybe it's an owl. Is that a bump on that log? Oh my gosh, it's an owl. It comes about like that. And the strange things happen. A strange thing happens when you see your first owl of a particular species. something happens in our brain. Our brain makes a map of that shape and of that size and of that color. So then in the future, as you scan the edges of that woodland or that field, your brain naturally is attracted to where it senses the shape and those colors may reside, and it can
Yes.
spot it.
Doug Tallamy, the entomologist and ecologist, who's a specialist in Lepidoptera, was always out looking at caterpillars and moths and so forth, said it's a search image. What you just said, that sort of implant in the brain of that image, it's a search image, and it really does get imprinted in there, and you know what you're looking for the next time and the next time and the next time. It's like it becomes familiar. It's fascinating. How many species in the United States and Canada was, I think it was 19, I think I read in the book. Is that correct?
Yes, you have it. There's 19 species in the US and Canada. And then there are some significant subspecies, significant in that they're threatened subspecies for instance, a spotted owl has a northern spotted owl, a California spotted owl, and a Mexican spotted owl. And the ferruginous pygmy owl has a cactus ferruginous pygmy owl, and then a what's called a Ridgeway pygmy owl. And those are separated because of subtle differences, but I call them out because they are indicator species for particular habitats that are risk. And as indicator species, their presence attests to the health of the ecosystem. Owls have that role in every ecosystem they inhabit, and they inhabit every major ecosystem with the exception of alpine tundra habitat.
Right. Here, where I am in the kind of Hudson Valley, Berkshires area of the Northeast, we have, I think, Eastern Screech, Great Horned, Barred, Short-eared, Northern Sauwette. And then I think we see the snowy sometimes. So I think
Yes.
that's sort of our owl palette, so to
Yes.
speak. And you have different ones there where
Yes.
you are that are your sort of home owls. But owls move around. I was surprised, reading in the book, some of them, they're not all resident in an area year round, huh? They move about.
Yes. It's quite fascinating. Owls are, for the most part, if we were to generalize, the greatest occurrence is they are monogamous and stay with one mate for life unless one dies. But that is a fraction of the owls that stay on one home range, which is the area that they cover during a given year. Now, within a home range, you have a territory, which is typically based upon a nest site that is defended against other owls of their species, and perhaps later after the young fledge, around a food source. And most owls will remain on that territory year round, but there are some fascinating exceptions. So, for instance, the northern hawk owl is nomadic, and you may have it nest regularly several hundred miles from where it nested in the previous year. And the more nomadic an owl is, the less predictable its movements, and thus the less likely it is that it will pair up with the same mate year after year. Now, there are other owls that are migratory, and these owls will move, 700 miles every year on fairly predictable paths, but some of them are complex in their migrations, in that, yes, they'll go on the same general path, but they will show up where the food is, and they have a way somehow of knowing where their target food is. And for many owls, particularly the ones that are nomadic, the prime prey are animals in the vole and lemming families. These animals are very eruptive. Eruptive meaning they can have excessively large numbers on some years and very few on others. And many owls have developed the ability to reap, to create more young, to create more eggs and raise more young when the voles or lemmings are plentiful, and may not even breed when they are not.
So they're opportunists.
They're
They
very
go where dinner
opportunistic.
is.
Yeah. And it's really interesting when you contrast even within a species. So, for instance, the great gray owl, which is found in the upper Great Lakes region and in the mountains of the Pacific Northwest and then through Canada and Alaska, in the southern part of its range, It is able to feed on two major food items, the voles and gophers. As a result, when one food item's down, usually they don't fail both at the same time. So one food item's down, the other might be up. So they breed almost every year, but they produce fewer young and they have smaller territories. In the northern US and throughout much of Canada and Alaska, during the breeding season, they feed on 90%+ voles, and thus vole populations are much less regular than gopher populations. So thus these birds have to produce more young because they don't breed every year. So whereas the ones in the south will produce one, two, three young, the ones in the north might produce five or six. And they also have the ability not only to possess a territory, but to be familiar with multiple territories and switch between those territories depending which one has more voles in a given season.
Smart, very smart. And I read in the book A Year in the Lives of North American Owls, I read that the different species, they can range from as small as 12 ounces, which is like a smallish crow in weight, to 6.5 pounds, which is like twice, I think, the weight of a red-tailed hawk, so that's a pretty big creature. And I think the snowy is the largest of our owls.
Yeah,
Is that right?
the female snowy owl is the largest owl, and it can weigh up to 6 pounds. And I read once where the author compared the size and weight of a snowy owl to a bag of sugar. And think about how heavy a bag of
Dense.
sugar is.
That's
It's dense.
heavy.
And the smallest, I would think, I mean, crow size is close, but when you see the northern pygmy owl or the elf owl in particular, it feels sparrow-sized in
No, I
size.
just looked up body weights and, well, in Cornell Lab of Ornithologies, they
Yeah.
have, comparative sizes of birds and so forth. And I was like, where does it fit if it's, oh, but
Yeah,
it's
it's.
fascinating, fascinating. And it has either have other physical characteristics. I mean, the way their head turns, I'm sorry. I think you say the book is like as much as 200 degrees or something. I mean,
Yeah,
it's
200 plus. One time, it's funny the way human beings relate to owls. There's something about the way they appear that makes us project all kinds of superpowers onto them, all the capabilities we wish we could have. And I was once looking for a northern hawk owl on a ranch up in, or some lands up in Manitoba. And so I went to the door of a farmhouse and I knocked on the door and I asked him if I could go inside of his fence and see if I could find an owl. And he said, "Yeah, but first you got to hear my story. I went into my barn once and I looked and there was an owl looking at me inside the barn and it spun its head completely around 6 times before it stopped and looked at me." But there's others that believe that owls are very wise, that they are. I can't tell you how many people have tell me a story about how an owl appears right after they lost a loved one, as if the owl is the spirit of that person. And the Ainu in Japan believed that the owls were the guardians of their villages, and the Hopi Indians had saw special reverence to the burrowing owls. And throughout human history, every society has had these strong, powerful beliefs about them, oftentimes as forewarnings of good times or bad, as symbols of wisdom or symbols of bad luck or sorcery. And then even the way they look has mesmerized people. The Mandarin word for owl, Mao Toing, is cat-headed eagle.
Cat-headed eagle. Well, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Because they are great hunters. Predators. Generally speaking, I think they are thought of as raptors, even though they're not related closely to eagles or hawks.
Yes.
They're more closely related, I think, to like nightjars and nighthawks. But another thing that has always interested me, living in a rural place surrounded by a lot of forest, is that where, as we've talked about before, when we talked about your woodpecker book not so long ago, when you have a lot of trees, especially old trees, Owls and woodpeckers, no coincidence that they're both around such habitats. But spring comes early for owls. They don't wait
Yes.
for for spring. Like when the light just starts to get a little, the days start to get a little longer, they're vocalizing and they're nesting. And
Yes.
yeah, their season's very different from a lot of our other birds. And I think
Yes.
that's fascinating also.
Yeah, and it is fascinating. There is a trick to that, and that's that owl eggs hatch at virtually the identical time that their target prey begins to become available in more
Oh,
abundance.
wow.
Their prey arises from tunnels in the ground and will be found more on the surface, or they go out of a dormancy. And so the earliest nesting of our owls, the great horned owl, has much more of a varied diet, so it can nest much earlier. And the advantage of nesting earlier is you can get your young can be raised and attended to over a longer period of time before the winter comes. And owl youngsters have a longer period of dependency than many birds. I mean, when we talked about the woodpeckers, I noted that most woodpeckers were dependent on their parents for about 4 weeks. For owls, it's not unusual to be dependent on the parents for 4 months, much
Ouch.
longer. So getting that early start helps them. Now, going back to the hunting, what's fascinating about owls is owls are famous for their silent flight. But that silent flight for those owls that specialize in finding their prey based upon hearing, that silent flight also allows them to listen more carefully to the ground below without the disruption of loud wings. So the species of owls that specialize on hunting using hearing, so short-eared owls, long-eared owls, great gray owls, they all have silent flight, and they have ears that are offset. For you and I, our ears are in the same plane. So that when we hear a sound, we turn our heads towards that sound. We have a
Yes.
sense of the direction. And owls' ears are offset, and they're simply holes in the skull. They're not the ear tufts you see in a great horned owl, but they're holes on either side of the skull that are offset so that sound reaches one ear before it reaches the other, helping the owl determine not just the direction of the sound, but the height of the sound. And they combine that with those distinct the feathers of that distinctive facial disc you see, that distinctive rim of feathers you see around the head of the typical owl. That
Yes.
feature is most distinctive in those owls that rely upon their hearing. And I think of it as they can compress or expand that row or that frame of rigid feathers. And it's almost like the auditory equivalent of squinting. And it allows them to funnel that sound like a parabolic disc to those offset ears. And those two working in conjunction, not distracted by the noise of flight, allow these hearing specialists to catch prey under snow and grass while in flight, prey that they never see, but yet they capture, even if they have to push through the turf and the snow to do it.
Well, you mentioned the great horned, and we were talking about diet and hunting and so forth. And I'll tell you my owl story. I lived in this place for, well, I've been here decades, and always I would hear the sound in, I would think of it as late winter, of the barred owl, the who cooks for you
Yes.
sound. You know, very probably the most familiar where I am of owl sounds, and. 2 or 3 winters, maybe 3 winters ago it would be now, I didn't hear it anymore, but I heard, well, you know who I heard. I heard the great horned owl, yeah, who moved in. And guess what? Guess what are the things that the great horned owl preys upon?
Yes.
So that was a real, you know, that was a shock for me. You know, it's almost like killing your own. You know, of course, we project, you know, we anthropomorphize and project all this stuff
Yes.
onto animals, and that's crazy, but I and you know I the bard hasn't been back, and
Yes.
the great horned are here. They've taken the edge of the forest here.
Yes.
So I wanted just to talk a little bit about, besides the right food available. What makes good owl habitat? And this kind of dovetails into what we talked about before with woodpeckers, who are not disconnected from this, the answer to this question. What makes good habitat for owls? What do they a lot of them nest in cavities in trees and on tops of old broken down off trees and things like that. Yes.
Yes, and I love your story about the great horned and the barred owl. And there's two things, though, going on there. I love it. I mean, not because of the sad news, because
No, I
that's
know.
sad, but because even if that great horned had not eaten that barred owl, you might have missed that barred owl, because every habitat is ephemeral. Every habitat is
Yes,
constantly changing
changing.
into another.
Yes,
And the great horned owl prefers the forest edge.
yes.
Yeah, because edge hunters oftentimes are the generalists, and they benefit from being able to hunt in the woods and in the open. They can get more prey that way, whereas the barred owl is more an owl of closed, canopied forests. And the two can coexist in the same forest as long as there's plenty of open lands and plenty of closed canopy forest. Each will Well, I won't say avoid each other. The great horn doesn't have to avoid much,
Guess
but
not.
they can both coexist, and they coexist in the park near my house right now from year to year. But owl habitat's interesting. The most important thing, not surprisingly, is where do they hunt and where do they nest? And for some, it's in the same type of habitat. So, for instance, a northern pygmy owl, which can be found in the mountains of the West, and sometimes on the coast. The northern pygmy owl is an edge specialist, but it hunts and nests along that edge where there's lots of aspen and birch and alder, but also closed canopy forests, and will eat everything from a frog and a lizard to a vole or a Steller's jay or even a large woodpecker. A northern spotted owl only lives in closed canopy forests that have trees that are over 150 years old and have large standing dead trees. A burrowing owl only exists, is only able to breed and hunt in short grass prairie. So, in other words, where the grass has been grazed low, and where so it can use its long legs to see in a distance in a treeless habitat. The short-eared owl, on the other hand, requires long grass prairie, because they nest directly on the ground and need to have their nests hidden. They hunt from the air, not from the ground or a raised perch. So they can benefit from the tall grass prairie. And it's really surprising the owls help us see habitats we otherwise might otherwise miss. So, for instance, if you're out in that open landscape in an agricultural area, it's really important that that agriculture area has the grazed areas for the burrowing owl, the tall grass areas for the short-eared owl, but also in that same habitat, you may have long-eards along the streamways and the riparian areas nesting in magpie nests. You might have barn owls nesting in barns and steeples or in cliffside caves, where they might have to find a cliffside cave that is safe from a great horned owl nesting in another cliffside cave or on a raptor nest. So even a habitat like our agricultural lands that may seem bereft of wildlife may have six or seven owl species. Join those owls I just mentioned might be joined by a northern saw-whet owl in a riparian area, or a western screech owl or eastern screech owl in those same areas in a lightly treed landscape. Now, what's important is not just the prey, but also the nests. And of our 19 species, more than 10 of them nest in the cavities created by woodpeckers. I should say 10 of them nest in the cavities created by woodpeckers. And they benefit by the fact that each of these architects meaning the 22 species of woodpeckers, creates a cavity of a specific size that would fit a specific owl, because every cavity nesting bird provides a cavity that they can fit into, but barely. They don't want excess room where a predator might reach in with talons or bill and pull them out. So they want a tight fit. So the fact there are so many woodpecker species creating cavities of different sizes, facing different in different habitats, facing in a different direction, has allowed the development of these different sized and specialized owls. In many habitats, I can hear a different woodpecker wake me up in the morning and a different owl serenade me at night.
We've run out of time. There's a lot of owls and there's a lot more to learn. And that's glad to have spent some time with your various owl books, including Owl, A Year in the Lives of North American Owls. We'll have a giveaway with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. I should have said that. I'm always glad to talk to you. And I can't wait to see pictures of some of those babies you've been seeing in your recent photo journey. So thank you for making time today.
Thank you, Margaret.
Okay.
It's absolutely a pleasure.
Talk to you soon again. Bye-bye. And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com.